My name is Sanjeev Gupta, and this is Socialism in the Time of Corona. In this podcast, I'm talking with people with deep experience in socialist and left politics, especially in the US. Our overarching question is, during this pandemic, how might we not only defend whatever gains we've made to this point, but actually advance them? In this episode, I try to get a feel for the challenges and opportunities for political education inside the Democratic Socialists of America, DSA. I talk with two experienced DSA educators about political education generally, what it consists of, what it should do, and who gets to do it. We also discuss political education in the specific context of the DSA. The organization now has more than 70,000 members with multiple chapters in each state. At its national convention last summer, DSA resolved that, quote, "National DSA shall prioritize building and implementing a socialist political education program. This program is the charge of the National Political Education Committee." Daphna Thier is a member of that national committee, as well as of New York City's Central Brooklyn chapter of the DSA, and author of What's the Matter with the Israeli Working Class?, a chapter in the forthcoming book Palestine, A Socialist Introduction, published by Haymarket Press. Austin Hayes is chair of the Education Committee of Olympia DSA in the state of Washington, all the way across the country from my own chapter here in Western Massachusetts. Our chapters are roughly comparable in size and rural or semi-rural setting. As a disclaimer, this podcast has no financial or any other official connection with DSA. All views I express here are my own. I started by asking Daphna about the origins of her own interest in political education.
Yeah, when I was first introduced to radical politics, I was invited to a meeting. It was called Live from Death Row, and it was with Mumia Abu-Jamal. At the time, the campaign to end the death penalty was running this series of basically hosting, featuring people who were on death row, and at the time Mumia was still on death row, and he had just published his seventh book, I think, Behind Bars, and this book was called Jailhouse Lawyers, and I bought it, and it was the first really nonfiction book that I had ever read, and I was just really struck by it, because in it he describes these inmates who, wrongfully convicted or otherwise, you know, behind bars on trumped up charges, and lots of them from backgrounds where they, you know, from impoverished backgrounds, right? They didn't have representation. They didn't have good lawyers. They didn't have the money for that. And many of them illiterate. And they learn to read by studying the law. And I was just so blown away by that, because at that moment when I was reading about these people, a realization sort of dawned on me that really, the human mind is just incredible, is just capable of anything. And we are just incredibly intelligent. We're able to learn anything, to develop our minds in any number of ways. And I thought to myself, well, if they can do that, then I can learn things too. And so I, if you had spoken to me a decade ago, more than a decade ago, I was a very different person. I didn't think of myself as an intellectual. And it was at that time that I started to be more vigorous and to start to consume more of the kind of world around me and to think about it critically and to read and to pursue things that I thought were important to understand about the world and to read books and become basically a worker intellectual, which I think is a very important part of being a socialist.
Wow, there's a lot there. Let me follow up by asking both of you this really naive question. What does political education mean? Or what do we mean by, you know, political education as opposed to, let's say, just, you know, education generally? And perhaps Daphna, if you want to tackle that first.
Sure. I mean, I think education is always about developing your mind, developing consciousness. But I think specifically for political education, it's about empowerment and developing leadership skills. So we want people to be able to build their analysis, their understanding, so that they can have a vision, because the movement that we're building, unlike most organizations and movements, is a movement that is grassroots and is meant to be led by the rank and file. So we're really looking for rank and file leadership. And in order to be a leader, you really have to be pretty educated. So I would say that to me is at the heart of political education and sort of in distinction from more traditional education.
Yeah. Austin, what would you say, you know, political education is? And you can also then just go ahead and maybe say, you know, in the context of your chapter.
Yeah, absolutely. I really agree with a lot of what Daphna just said. And, you know, I think often when we think about education, both political education within, you know, political organizations, and then also like public education, there's elements to education that are going to be political. You know, the ways in which our public school systems sometimes engage with social studies and history often can feel political in the sense that they're taught to be apolitical, right? Like the way in which history is kind of taught as a narrative more than we're really taught to engage in critical thinking, which, you know, obviously people are more exposed to in college, but for those that don't go to college, there's less room to grow in those critical thinking skills. And I think those critical thinking skills that are built through conversation and through political build what Daphna was talking about, build those internal leaders, build this stronger internal community where you all feel more secure in your ideas and are able to then, you know, bring those to people outside of the organization and have those conversations with others outside of the organization. One more thing on this, I think DSA often brings in people who are very new to the ideas of socialism. So having this political education within a chapter where people are able to come into their own in these ideas is really important. And here locally in Olympia DSA, we have for a while, we've had a reading group going on where on a monthly basis, we would we would choose a topic the month beforehand and cultivate articles regarding around a specific topic and then come together, have a discussion about the topic that following month. But we've now switched from that to doing a socialist night school program, which I can go into more detail about, but basically it's an opportunity for people that have been a bit more cultivated as leaders internally to start leading discussions and leading these presentations and facilitating discussions between our members on a variety of topics.
Yeah, I'd love to talk with you more about that, since, you know, we want to get something like that going here as well. And actually, your chapter has been really helpful already in, you know, sharing materials. I'd like to ask Daphna again, sort of, so, you know, unlike education in school or college, where at least we think there is some standard body of knowledge that someone's decided, okay, you know, everyone of a certain age or taking a certain course needs to learn this. And, you know, let's take that as unproblematic simply for the sake of argument here, you know, even though obviously there's issues there. But for an organization like ours, where people really are coming to the organization, sometimes kind of, you know, fresh, but often sort of already quite well formed in their experiences and ideas. What is the role and character of education there, where there's already distinct, you know, ways of looking at the world, even within socialism?
So for me, a big part of what political education about, like I mentioned, is that developing of shared perspective. I mean, I think that a lot of us have sort of kind of along the lines of what Austin was saying, right? We have an exposure that is political, but it's really the kind of ruling ideas, the common sense ideas, and they're not necessarily the ideas that as socialists, we want to kind of break through these ideas that, for example, that capitalism is somehow natural, that people are greedy, that, you know, racism has always existed, you know, that women are naturally one way or another, that there are only two kinds of genders. All of those are ideas that we learn, that we are taught in many different ways. And really, this is about a kind of radical departure from that and that critical opening up of everything, right? We want to just sort of criticize and think about everything and not take anything for granted. And I don't even, am I answering your question? Am I going in the right direction here?
Yes, you know, I am realizing now that the question itself was so long-winded that, you know, so I'll try to make it a little crisper. So, you know, I'm thinking that one of the concerns that may, you know, if you guys remember the DSA convention last year at which, you know, we voted for a national political education program and committee, you know, the pushback came from, I think, concerns that somehow there's going to be an effort to, you know, promote certain views of socialism, or that it would be done in a way that doesn't take into account, you know, the local variation and what people need to learn about or want to learn about. And so I'm trying to get a little bit at that when we say political education in that context, where people have like very distinct, you know, so let's say we all agree that, you know, capitalism is exploitative, but then there's differences in, you know, do you, well, you know, you can pick your favorite thing that people like us will argue among ourselves about. So in that context, what's the role of national political education?
Yeah, that's an excellent, that's an excellent question. You know, I think that the idea that we prevent a sort of top-down version of, you know, just sort of like deciding what our politics are, because we create space to discuss politics on a national level, you know, I don't think that makes sense, right? I think it's the opposite. I think it's when we don't discuss politics, when we don't create spaces where people can debate, then you really have politics that are being promoted, but they're not being clarified. They're not being stated clearly. They're not being presented in a way that people can actually engage with them and decide for themselves if they agree. So it's really important, actually, to have that be a national effort. And I mean, I think there's a role, a very important role, and this kind of relating to something that both of you had said before, where we actually want our leadership in chapters and elsewhere to be in discussions with membership about their politics. We want them to give talks, political talks. We want to be able to think about what it is that they believe and whether we agree. And we need to be training the most amount of people with that kind of skill set of critical thinking. And in order to do that, we have to present clear politics. You can't learn to argue against something if you've never heard an argument stated clearly that you then think about what you think about that.
Yeah. I actually really like that way of the way you just put it, that education actually includes the, it's not imparting necessarily, like, there might be some imparting of, you know, some specific, you know, whatever knowledge or history, but part of education is actually learning enough about the different, you know, debates that one can participate intelligently and fully in them. And so that's education too, is just, yeah, being able to know what the differences are and argue them out. So I really like that. Austin, do you have a take on this issue of what political education should mean for a multi-tendency political organization?
For like my own personal perspective on this, when I was first introduced to the idea of doing like a socialist night school program, this is when I went down to Portland DSA, where they were doing a sort of a regional convention down there. And I had kind of raised this question, just kind of wondering what that is like in an organization. How do you have these discussions where, you know, obviously there's different opinions and different tendencies. Have you have these discussions around these certain topics or these certain thinkers or, you know, these certain events in history? And I guess the only, this almost feels just kind of like restating what was just said, but I don't think there's any specific idea or event where you can just present it and you can only come away with one idea, one way of thinking about that, right? So like when we've done reading groups or when we have assigned readings for courses, I feel like it would be more difficult to try to cultivate like a group of readings that all come from the exact same perspective on that. So, you know, these conversations, like Daphne was saying, these conversations cultivate space for debate and for articulating different perspectives and, you know, becoming more secure in what you believe with these ideas. I think DSA, you know, for me, the democratic part of DSA, like, I feel like we can have very rigorous discussions internally, right? We can have a varied points of views and still have these uniting principles. And I think very similarly, we can have that through political education.
Well,
do you mind, Sanjeev, if I just, I agree with all that. And I think, you know, just to add on to that, that we can't really, so so many decisions that we make on the chapter level or in whatever capacity, right, are actually political decisions. But if we don't have a majority of our membership engaged in the highest level of political thinking, then we don't have a truly democratic, participation in those bigger strategic questions that then influence the priorities and the decision making within campaigns or on the chapter level in whatever setting. We have to have spaces where we can talk about things and figure out what we agree on and also what we disagree on. So the things that we agree on, that's great, and we figure out how to move forward there. And also where we disagree, it's good to know, it's important to know that and to be able to decide that it's okay for us to continue and try to convince each other. Ultimately, I think we want to be able to be in agreement on many things, and we want to also be able to act collectively and know, okay, well, we disagree here, but a majority of people think this way, and so we're going to try this out. And a minority can continue to argue their position, and those things can all be within the same organization, but we also want the ability to move forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as both of you are talking, I'm sort of thinking to myself that, perhaps in another conversation, we could sort of play this out in the context of a specific, issue that we've encountered recently, or some specific political problem. I'm sure you guys have come across this. One of the things that I've heard sometimes is people who are maybe especially either new to DSA or are getting just exposed to a sort of, some of the jargon that goes along with socialism, complain about just being the high cost of entry. Like, they'll come to a meeting and someone will, refer to the Third International, decision about X or Y, and or Marx's, this particular paragraph in the Grundrisse, and that's instantly like sort of befuddling to people. How should we approach education in the context of an organization where there is that just huge range of, prior exposure to these things?
Yeah, I think that's I really agree. That's a huge part of political education. When I speak to people, even within chapter leadership, that people will say, I actually don't know what tendency I agree with. I don't know what my tendency is, or when speaking of socialist tendencies, or I don't know what it means, when we talk about socialist strategy, or just a sort of it's just there's so much history to our traditions and so much history in the socialist movement that has just been lost really over the last few decades, since the kind of collapse of the socialist movement post the 60s and 70s. So there's all this like rich history that has been separated from the class. And in many ways, we kind of have to regain that. We have to recreate spaces where we discuss that history, where we discuss the history of labor and the history of socialists and the politics, and read some of the kind of older things that people were thinking about, because some of it is appropriate for today, and develop the ability to write about those things today, to have more people writing and more people trying to put together what are the big questions or how to think about some of the big questions that we're faced with today.
I think this is a tricky question, because I think there are, you know, times like with your example of like someone bringing up like something very specific about the Third International, just kind of like as a point that they're making during a meeting, during like some sort of wider discussion. I think instances like that can be very hard to, like, you know, you can't really stop then and just kind of, you know, break down the discussion, you know, break down the discussion for a new discussion about what that whole historical moment was and what the point the person was making about it. But at the same time, I think it's important to make spaces both for like introductory discussions and for those more in the weeds sort of discussions as well. You know, that's something that we want to develop better with our Socialist Night School is we developed these courses for like what is socialism, what is capitalism, socialist strategy, that we thought were good introductory courses, but now that we've received some feedback on them, some people would like them to be even more introductory. So now we're trying to redesign them and think, you know, what were assumptions that we held as people with some of this knowledge that what are assumptions that we brought into it that maybe weren't correct, you know, that were kind of over-assumptive. But for people that you know, are in a meeting like that and, you know, that have that sort of experience, I think, you know, part of our job with educating, with teaching this history is like making sure these people know that they are connected to this history. This is their history as well. This is, you know, when we talk about these historical moments and these discussions, this is a shared history that we have, you know, with the past. And yeah.
That's such a good point. And I think I was just also thinking about that, the challenge of that you're describing about needing to have something that is sort of entry level enough where you can actually come in not having known anything and have a profound conversation. I think chapters are doing all kinds of experiments around the country trying to figure out different ways to do that. And on the National Political Education Committee, we're also workshopping materials and trying to figure out the best balance between, you know, having materials that are very introductory and materials that are kind of geared at people who've been around a little bit longer, so that we can kind of create a conversation between people at varying levels, or even people who aren't in the organization yet, and still have a relationship that is not kind of there's experts in the room and everyone who's brand new is just sort of taking in this material, and it's just sort of you know, here's the information, you take notes, you learn, and and that's it. But it's actually really a back and forth or a mutual conversation, because different people with different experiences always have something to bring into a conversation. And it doesn't matter if they know the ins and outs of the whatever specifics, or if they've read X, Y, or Z. A lot of the times, the things that we talk about as socialists are things that have to be incredibly connected to our lives as workers. And when we, for example, as socialists, are too far away from workers, if we don't connect ourselves to our own class, then we actually wind up talking about things in a sort of in circular ways, or you know, we lose track of the plot. So there's a really important relationship between people who are bringing in their experience and who are new and who are not, you know, not yet necessarily privy to all the jargon or all the ins and outs of the history, but that they kind of innately from their own life experience bring that into the discussion. And I think that's what, kind of speaking to what Austin was saying, I think that's where they are connected to that history and they're connected to that conversation, regardless of how well read they are. And just speaking for myself, you know, when I first joined, I have no formal education. And when I first joined, I had like basically never read a book. And wow. So for me, it was like a huge process of being, and at the time, you know, I've been a socialist for close to 12 years. A lot of the people around me were people who were academics, who were educated. And it could be very intimidating to come in and have to read so much material and just be unable really to understand what I was reading, especially when I was reading things written 100, 150 years ago and having, you know, like just the English I needed to understand, let alone the actual concepts or materials. So I think, I think we need to get better about that kind of thing. I think we need to be, I think we need to figure out creative ways to make all of this material accessible, and whether that's, you know, having read alouds, or whether it's having one person who's giving a kind of report on a book with other people who aren't yet ready to read the book, or if it's, you know, discussions of shorter materials, or, you know, any number of different ways that we can kind of process the material together. I mean, that's part of why we're an organization and not just individuals, is that we want to be able to share resources and help each other out in a cooperative way.
So it's really good to hear that at the, you know, at the national level, there's efforts to sort of create, you know, in that sense, actually, it sounds like a little bit like conventional education, right? I mean, you try to create sort of streams that people can enter, you know, at the level that they're prepared for, and then move on to the next. And that would be really cool for us to, I sort of like, you know, I feel like inventing that at the chapter level also has some advantages, because then you're really forced to think about your people, you know, the people you're in most direct contact with, which is great. And at the same time, you know, I'm like, wow, if I already had this, you know, we would have just saved a bunch of time and effort. I don't know if you feel that way, Austin. Like, would do you want to like be, you know, basically figuring out from scratch, sort of here's what X people should read and here's what Y people should read? Or is there a role for having that thought out at a different level? Yeah.
I would not have been able to even do a lot of the socialist night schools that I helped facilitate if it wasn't for like work that had already been done by other chapters. When I was, you know, when we were in the early planning stages of our socialist night school, one of the first things I did was go online, start looking at other chapters' websites and start looking at what resources they already had available, even if only to get a basis for like, you know, readings that people had already engaged with and stuff that have been helpful. You know, I forget where I even found it, but Metro DC DSA had a couple of their night schools online. So I was able to watch those and see how their chapter has engaged with it, you know, and get a feel for what did I think they did well? What are things that I want to change? So yeah, I think there has been a benefit to the fact that it seems like across our organization, people are trying to figure out ways to engage with these topics, and to know that, you know, the National Political Education Committee is also making similar resources, or, you know, more in-depth resources, and are able to talk to people in other chapters and figure out what other chapters are doing. I think we're just like creating an excellent bank of resources, you know, because these conversations will continue to develop, and the way that we talk about them within our organization will continue to develop over time. So
I really agree with that, and I think that's key, right? Sharing resources between chapters is a big part of what the National Political Education Committee is really trying to do, because there are chapters who are just setting up their political education now, who don't necessarily have a whole list of readings that they've kind of gone through, or that they've been working with or trying out, starting out by looking at what other people are doing, I think is a hugely important way to do that. And I also think that that is another way in which we connect both of those things, right? That what you're describing, Sanjeev, is we want people from the chapters and activism that's happening on the chapter level to be influencing the national discussion, to be influencing discussions all around the country. And the political education that we do cannot be separate from the work that we do and from the actual political questions that we as members have. So we want materials that are used on the chapter level, that are workshopped on the chapter level, and that are tried out in different contexts. And we want to be able to both centralize those resources in a space for people to have access to them, and also to get a constant conversation going about them, to have feedback about them, to have people that are engaged on the chapter level, helping to shape that.
So the process of developing the materials by itself can become a channel for communication between chapters and the national levels of the organization, so that it's not, you know, it's not a one-way sort of it's not a one-way process.
Absolutely.
Yeah, one kind of tangential thing, just kind of going off of that a little, and thinking about like our context right now with the ongoing pandemic, we had an organizer in Olympia DSA that organized this really excellent event called like Beyond Bernie. It was sort of, talking about what comes next after the Bernie Sanders campaign. And the organizer decided just to send an email to Megan Day and Micah Utrecht to see if they'd be interested in joining us. And they did. And it provided this opportunity for really, a really good discussion where we talk about, you know, what we were able to accomplish here in Olympia and Thurston County with the Bernie campaign. And then, you know, kind of like looking across the country at what DSA has been able to accomplish with it, and have a discussion with the authors of a book about it. And, yeah. There's a lot of people in DSA that you can be reaching out to right now, for anyone that's organizing political education in their chapters. Reach out to the authors of maybe some of these works that you're engaging with. People have a good amount of availability. Well, some people have a good amount of availability right now, where they might be more able to join you digitally right now than they would have been otherwise.
That's a great
actually,
point.
Yeah. Sanjeev, that reminds me of something that the NPEC is trying to work towards, is to start a speakers bureau, so that we train new speakers, but we also collect people who are sort of experts on different topics, and we share this as a resource that chapters can use, given the fact that so much is possible to do right now online, and kind of necessary to do online, and just have people give a talk, to any number of chapters. And so that kind of work is both helping to promote people from all around the country that otherwise wouldn't, necessarily have the opportunity to be in conversation with each other, and, develop a new layer of speakers in the organization, and is a good way to kind of pool our resources across the organization.
Fabulous. You know, I'm just thinking, I know that DSA has added on, thousands of members over the last couple of months. And, it's an arbitrary thing to say, oh, okay, next convention is, in about a year. But if one thinks about it that way, as a convenient device to think about, okay, so in a year, what would, given that we sort of voted to get this effort going, you know, in the previous convention, what should it, or what would be ideal, you know, to sort of come out by next year with? And I love the, you know, if there's a speakers bureau, there's like, you know, talks prepared by really people from all over the country, many of whom hopefully are just new, you know, to doing that kind of work. That would be phenomenal. You know, to me, like, to, I mean, I'm, you know, I'm, it's just kind of energizing to be part of a, you know, national organization and having that kind of like contact that I can have, you know, person X from Olympia, you know, drop into my chapter reading group to talk mm-hmm. about something would be just, you know, would be such a crucial part of building that identity and, you know, yeah, just making us think of each other as part of the same group. I've come away from this conversation with a clearer appreciation of the organizational value of political education for a national organization. Quite apart from specific knowledge, analysis, and so on, the very act of engaging in it collectively, sharing what works and what doesn't, collaborating on materials and events, all of that can be as important in bringing us together as participating in a national electoral campaign, for example. Along with this episode, you'll find a talk given at a recent regional political education event by Robbie Nelson of Central Brooklyn DSA on the question, why the working class? Join us in thinking aloud about how our day-to-day work during Corona can cohere into a battle plan for democratic socialism after it.